This is Dan's Mega 65 Digest for August 2026, Calypso C Part 3, Making Large Programs. Previously on the Digest, we were looking at ways to fit the original Unix Rogue Dungeon Crawler game into the Mega 65 memory system using the Calypso C compiler and a bootloader. The memory map we came up with keeps the kernel in memory, so the program can use a kernel-based implementation of the C standard library without fuss, in case we need it. That meant storing both code and data in banks 0 and 1, and using the 45GSO2 map register to point 24 kilobytes of the 16-bit address space at one of five regions of the 28-bit address space. We got as far as teaching Calypso how to place code and data into these regions upon request, compiled as if visible at the 16-bit addresses, as well as how to output each region as a separate file that could be loaded into memory by a bootloader program. The 24-kilobyte window works like a giant spotlight pointed at one region at a time. We need a mechanism to move that spotlight when code in one region wants to access code or data in another region. Calypso doesn't know how to do this when generating code for function calls, so we also need to revise the rogue code to move the spotlight at appropriate times. Finally, we need to decide how to organize all of the pieces of rogue into the regions. I've been working with Calypso's author, HTH313, while writing this series, and he has a new version with improvements based on those discussions. Go get Calypso 5.18 for your platform. A bit of code in this digest depends on a fix in the most recent version. Let's see how far we get. Paused shipping to the EU. Trends Electronic has temporarily paused shipments of the Mega 65 to the EU, except for Austria and France. A new EU regulation on packaging waste has gone into effect, and many small retailers are pausing shipments while they figure out how to comply. The European Union Packaging and Packaging Waste Regulation, PPWR, seeks to reduce packaging waste, a serious problem in the EU that needs some kind of solution. It covers all packaging for products made for sale in EU member states, including imports. You can find more information on the European Commission website. Summer of Cores. Several alternate core projects have been inspiring each other to make progress this summer. I try to only introduce projects in this space and not report every incremental improvement, but it's worth doing a roundup, especially considering the growing interest in the Mega 65 as a multi-core platform. As always, see Boris's Mega 65 Alternate Cores website at cores.mega65.org for up-to-date information. The Amiga 500 OCS core by Psy2002 now has a stable version 1 release, with support for a single virtual disk drive, analog CRT displays, and the ability to disable slow RAM. Psy2002 is already working on a version 2, with version 2 Alpha 8 being the latest test release as of this writing. This test release includes read-only physical floppy disk support, with the built-in disk drive, up to 3 virtual drives, and improved support for some disk copy protection. Testers are reporting good results, including the ability to use Xcopy to copy original physical disks to ADF disk images. Note that the core does not yet have the ability to create ADF images on the SD card, so you'll have to use a PC tool to make some empty images to play with. Be sure to follow along in the Discord when testing alpha releases, and provide feedback. M. Jurgen and Psy2002 are making improvements to the C64 core with two exciting projects, physical internal 1581 floppy drive support, and a built-in RRNet-compatible network interface based on the Mega 65's Ethernet port. You can test out a version Alpha 19X2 to play along. Psy2002 has also updated the Game Boy Color core to version 1.0, to support the latest R6 mainboards and use the latest Mr. to Mega framework. The Game Boy Color core was a very early alternate core, and it's exciting to see this update bring it forward for the latest hardware. Muse is back with an exciting new vintage desktop computer core, Mega 2E is an Apple IIe core with support for .nib disk images, Commodore-style joysticks and Amiga mice, and various video display options. Caution, do not connect an Apple II mouse to your Mega 65. They are not electronically compatible. See also the Mega 2E GitHub repo. Oh, and Muse is also working on an Atari 800 core. Phoenix has launched a Sinclair QL core. The QL was based on the Motorola 68008 CPU at 7.5 MHz with a multitasking operating system called QDOS. This version 1.0 release supports MDV disk images, selectable memory configurations, and CPU speed. Last but not least, Paolo Pisati, or Piso, has started an MSX1 core based on the Mister core. The current test version supports PAL video, cartridge ROMs, and Commodore joysticks. Keep up the good work, everyone! VCF Midwest. A quick reminder that I'll be at the Vintage Computer Festival Midwest in Schaumburg, Illinois, USA, September 12th to 13th. It's one of the biggest volunteer-run vintage computer shows in the United States. Do stop by if you have a chance. VCF West was a blast. I shared a table area with Gary Kitchen and David Crane, and I got to chat with them about GameMaker, Activision, and 6502 assembly language. Steve Wozniak was on stage telling Apple I stories. I showed off RogueCraft and the Amiga Core to tons of people. And I brought home too many books, as always. Good times. Common Memory Maps. I know the last few Digest feature articles have felt like a lot of material that seems specific to Rogue and Calypso, so I want to take a moment to review why this is important. These are generally useful design patterns for large Mega 65 programs. The 32 kilobyte PRG. The deload command can load a PRG up to 53 kilobytes in size into bank 0 starting at address hexadecimal 2001. This is sufficient for basic programs up to 53 kilobytes. For PRGs that contain a basic launcher and machine code, such as assembly language or compiled C code, the default memory map invoked by the sys command only allows the CPU to see 40 kilobytes of this as machine code. The default Calypso linker config limits this to 32 kilobytes, which can be amended to use the remaining 8 kilobytes for the heap and soft stack if needed. The kernel remains fully available to the program in this map. Short programs and far data. Calypso uses 16-bit addressing for code, heap, stack, and variables not flagged as far data, using the __far qualifier. A program that keeps all of its code in the first 32 kilobytes could use upper memory for data in several ways. One way is to amend the linker config with far sections and tell Calypso to put specific variables there with the far qualifier. Another way is for the program to manage upper memory directly using far pointers and addresses. A third way, which we haven't properly introduced yet in the digest, and I've been meaning to get to it, is to use the DMA feature of the CPU to copy upper memory into lower memory as needed. The program might not even need to manipulate this memory much if it's just loading in graphics or sound data to be pointed at by hardware registers. Such a program can still be a single PRG file and can still use the kernel at any time. Multi-region programs and bootloaders. When machine code outgrows the 32 kilobytes, the next step up is the strategy we discussed previously. Kernel code stays visible in the upper half of the 16-bit address space, controlled by map high. Kernel variables stay visible in the lower half, controlled by map low, and DOS variables remain unmolested in bank 1. There's room for the heap and soft stack in the upper half of bank 0. That leaves a 24 kilobyte region of the lower half at addresses 2000 to 7FFF that can be pointed to any region in memory using the map register. This requires manually organizing the program into 24 kilobyte regions and using a technique for transitioning code execution between regions that we'll discuss in this digest. It also requires a separate bootstrap program that the user deloads and runs to put all of the regions into memory from separate files and launch the program. Kernelless full control. If a program doesn't need the kernel, or only needs it under specific circumstances, The program can take over the entire 16-bit address space and do whatever it wants. It still has to comply with a few requirements of the CPU, specifically the placement of the base page or zero page and CPU stack, and the management of interrupt handlers, which the kernel does for us in the other schemes. The program could even switch back to a kernel-compatible map temporarily to use its features, such as accessing disks, as long as it's careful to stash and restore kernel and DOS variable space and meet other preconditions. More control over 16-bit address space gives the program more options for efficiency and speed, with less time spent on map switching and far data access. Rogue could be a kernel-optional program. It only needs disk access when saving and restoring the game, or updating the high score table. But I don't want to make the first version too complicated, unless I have to. Dispatching function calls between regions. We've seen how to convince Calypso to put code and data into different regions using the pragma statement. But all this does is change how the output of the compiler is organized. The code that Calypso generates for calling a function simply uses the 16-bit address assigned to the fragment in the region. If a function in one region calls a function in another region, we need to add code to the program that changes the map before the call and changes it back afterward. Consider a simple C function and another function that calls it. Say we have a function named times that takes two integers, multiplies them together, and returns the integer result. Our main function calls times with the arguments 7 and 3 and stores the result in a variable. If we compiled this program in Calypso, well, it'll outsmart us and generate machine code for a single function that stores the number 21 precalculated by the optimizer. For this thought experiment, imagine the optimizer is turned off or that this otherwise doesn't happen. When the compiler sees times 7.3 in the definition for main, it produces code that performs these steps. Step 1, prepare the arguments 7 and 3. Step 2, JSR to the address of the times subroutine. The subroutine executes, prepares the return value, then executes an RTS instruction. Step 3, manage the value returned by times. One of the biggest tasks of the compiler is to figure out the optimal code to perform these steps in a way that works for all callers of the times function. In most cases, the compiler puts arguments in the zero page, then adds instructions that move them around to meet the expectations of the function being called. If necessary, it'll put arguments on the C soft stack. The code that it generates for the times subroutine knows where to find its arguments, and all callers comply with the decisions that the compiler has made. The address of the times subroutine is determined by the linker. The compiler generates object code that leaves the address of the JSR instruction blank to be filled in later. In this example, the compiler assigns both functions to the same section, and the linker puts them next to each other in memory at distinct 16-bit addresses. Now imagine that we're using our regional memory system, and the functions are in two separate regions. A pragma statement declares that the code goes into region 2, followed by the definition of the times function. Another pragma changes the code segment to region 0, followed by a definition of the main function. The clang section pragma directives tell the compiler to generate the object code for each function earmarked for different sections. When the linker goes to place the fragment the compiler generated for the times function, it consults our linker configuration file and sees that the region 2 section starts at address 2000, and so wires up the times subroutine to be at that address. When the linker places the main function, it sees the compiler has requested the region 0 section, which is also configured to start at address 2000. So the linker wires up main as if it lives at 2000. Obviously, we want this to happen. These subroutines will actually reside in different regions of memory, and we want to add a step to move the map low window from region 0 to region 2 when main calls times. Perhaps the calling code looks something like this. Step 1, prepare the arguments 7 and 3. Step 2, update map to switch to region 2. Step 3, JSR to the address of the time subroutine. The subroutine executes, prepares the return value, then executes an RTS instruction. Step 4, update map to switch to region 0. Step 5, manage the value returned by times. Without further changes, the final machine code for main includes the instruction JSR2000, which is the 16-bit address of the time subroutine in region 2. We want this to occur after we change the map, so that times is visible at address 2000. There's just one problem. The JSR2000 instruction is in region 0. As soon as we change the map in step 2, region 0 will no longer be visible, and the CPU won't see the JSR instruction in step 3. For all intents and purposes, you can't perform a map change with instructions in the 16-bit addresses whose map is changing. When the CPU performs the map instruction, the program counter advances to the 16-bit address for the next instruction, but the view of memory has changed out from underneath it. The solution is to use a dedicated subroutine for managing the transition and to put the subroutine outside the regional memory window. In my linker configuration file, I reserve a common section at addresses 1600 to 1FFF for this purpose. The revised function call should look something like this. Step 1. Prepare the arguments 7 and 3. Step 2. Call the dispatch routine in the common section, giving it the new region, that's 2, and the subroutine address for times, that's 2000. The dispatch routine performs these steps. Dispatch step 2.1, change the map to region 2. Dispatch step 2.2, JSR to the address of the time subroutine. The subroutine exits, prepares the return value, then executes an RTS instruction to return to the dispatch routine. Dispatch step 2.3, restore map to region 0. Dispatch step 2.4, perform an RTS instruction to return to the caller. And finally, step 3, manage the return value returned by times. The JSR to the times routine functions correctly because it occurs in the common section, unaffected by the map change. When times returns, control returns to the dispatch routine so that it can change back to region 0 before returning to the main subroutine. Mixing assembly language and C. Recall that to update the map register, you perform the following 45GSO2 machine code instructions. Step 1. Load the CPU registers with the map low and map high register configuration, declaring which regions of the 16-bit memory are considered mapped and which offsets to use for the mapped regions. Step 2, invoke the map instruction to update the registers, disabling interrupts temporarily to prevent accidents with interrupt handlers. Step 3, invoke the EOM or end of map instruction to restore interrupts and continue program execution. You must always set both map low and map high when invoking the map instruction, because it'll use all four A, X, Y, and Z CPU registers. In this case, I'll just always set map high to a fixed value when changing map. So, how do we get this assembly language code into our C program? There are two ways to do this: assembly language files and inline assembly language inside C functions. Calypso has its own assembler, which can be invoked with the command AS6502. You can build your entire assembly language programs with Calypso, but it is more appropriate to use it to mix assembly language and C in the same project. Given an assembly language source file, typically with the .s file name suffix, AS6502 can produce an object file that can be linked with other object files into the final program. As with the C compiler, the object file the assembler produces is not a complete program and needs the linker to decide where the machine code lives in memory. The Calypso Mega 65 Starter project has a makefile rule that assembles all .s files in the project into object files. I'm using that makefile, so I merely need to create .s files alongside .c files, and they will be built into my project. Assembly language source code for a C project looks a bit different from pure assembly language project in other assemblers. The code needs to tell the linker the intended section for the code and how to make a subroutine available to C code as if it were a function. With some effort, an assembly language routine can be a full C function that other C code can call with arguments and can return a value. The routine can even access other C functions and global variables. See the article for example code that establishes region dispatch as an external symbol, with assembly language code that is placed in the common section. I also have a header file, dispatch.h, that describes how the C code should treat this subroutine as a function. This is enough for the C program to invoke the region dispatch assembly language subroutine by calling the region dispatch function, in this case without arguments or a return value. Lines in the assembly language source file assign the code to the common text section, which my linker configuration puts in 1600 to 1FFF. This code will always be resident, so any code can call it at any time, regardless of the current MapLow window setting. Assembly language can refer to symbols in other modules, such as global variables or C functions, by declaring them as externs. If you know that the symbol refers to a zero-page address, prefix it with ZP colon to force zero-page addressing. If the symbol refers to a 16-bit value, prefix it with .byte0 or .byte1 to access its individual bytes. See the article for examples. I'm just reading out the syntax. Assembly language knows nothing about C structures or types. Take care that the assembly code is treating the memory the way it wants to be treated. All of these features are documented in the Calypso User Guide, chapters 20 and 21. Inline assembly language. If you just need a few raw CPU instructions inside a C function and don't need them to be separate functions, you can use inline assembly language. You invoke the __ASM directive directly within a C function and give it a C string containing Calypso assembly language. This machine code is inserted directly into the machine code of the function. The C string must resemble an assembly language source file, including a leading space and a new line for each line. The ASM directive takes three optional constraints separated by colons. The second and third of these can be a list delimited by commas. These constraints serve the following purposes. The output variable. The assembly code prepares a result to return to the C code. It does so via a given register, which populates a given C variable. Input expressions. The C code prepares one or more values into registers prior to executing the assembly code. And clobbered registers. The assembly code modifies the given registers. Calypso will take this into account when optimizing the code that surrounds the assembly code. Calypso supports register classes for A, X, Y, Z, and Q for the 45G02 CPU. You can also request zero-page soft registers for the output and inputs using the desired size as the register class, ZP8, ZP16, or ZP32. The assembly code refers to a zero-page output variable address using %0 and refers to zero-page input variables using %1, %2, etc., in the order they appear in the input expression list. You can also give these inputs names instead of numbers. See the Calypso guide for the syntax. Implementing the dispatch routine. With assembly language at my disposal, I can now implement the dispatch mechanism. This needs to be a little bit clever. I mentioned that Calypso generates code for a function call to prepare arguments, perform the JSR, then process the return value. Ideally, for a dispatched function call, the map changes happen just before and after the JSR, so Calypso can still own the argument and return value preparation. If the C code says int result equals times parentheses 7 comma 3 close parentheses, there isn't really a way for me to inject the map changes into Calypso's usual sequence. Whatever alternative I provide needs to work for any function type signature. Also, the dispatch routine needs input parameters of its own, including the destination region. Here's what I came up with. 1. Use global variables to store the destination MapLow setting and function address. 2. Cast the function pointer to a pointer to a function with a void argument list and a void return type to support all possible function signatures. 3. Cast the dispatch function to the type of the original function pointer using a special type of expression such that Calypso treats the dispatch function as if it had the signature of the called function. 4. Call the dispatch function with the called function's arguments. 5. Within the dispatch function, detect the current map setting and push it to the stack so it can be restored later. These typecasting gymnastics took me a while to figure out. In particular, type of is a non-standard but popular extension of the C99 standard. It was added to GNU C a while ago and only adopted into the C standard starting with C23. The standard numbers refer to the year they were ratified. C99 is the year 1999, C23 is 2023. Calypso supports the type of extension. Performing all of these steps for every dispatched function call would make a big mess in the code. That's what preprocessor macros are for. I can wrap all of this in a macro that looks like a function call. Region dispatch with parentheses, inside of which are an argument that identifies the region, the name of the function being called, and the arguments for the function. In the earlier example, we put a function named times in region 2 and want to call it from the main function in region 0. Instead of times parentheses 7 comma 3 close parentheses, I can now dispatch between regions with region dispatch open parentheses region 2 comma times comma 7 comma 3 close parentheses. The ability for a macro to take an arbitrary number of arguments, known as variadic argument lists, was added to the C standard in C99. The ellipsis, three dots, at the end of the argument list says that the macro can accept any number of comma-delimited arguments at that point. The special symbol, underscore, underscore, capital V, capital A, underscore, capital ARGS, underscore, underscore, in the macro definition, expands to all of these arguments, preserving the commas. According to the C standard, C99 requires at least one variadic argument. C23 added support for empty variadic argument lists. Calypso has not backported this feature exactly, but it seems to support empty variadic argument lists anyway with the C99 syntax, so I'm not complaining. My implementation uses another relatively modern feature of C, known as a statement expression. This is a C expression that is actually multiple C statements inside parentheses and brackets. The last element is an expression that becomes the value of the entire statement expression. This allows me to define a preprocessor macro that acts like a function with a definition of multiple statements, but it's actually inserting the full definition everywhere the macro is used. Statement expressions are another GNU C extension not strictly supported by the C standard, but they are supported in Calypso. See the article for a complete implementation of the assembly language dispatch routine called by the macro definition. The region dispatch assembly language routine is standing in for the dispatched function. We are tricking Calypso into thinking it is the dispatched function so that it prepares arguments and manages return values in the same way as simply calling the function. The first thing region dispatch does is stash the CPU registers to be restored just before calling the dispatched function in case they're important. They may not be, but we don't want to confuse Calypso. The dispatch subroutine keeps track of the current state of map low by storing it in a variable every time it is set. This works fine as long as dispatch is in full control of the map register, which it is in this case. There is a way to read the current state of the map register by triggering the Mega65's hypervisor, but this is not needed in this case. Before it calls the function, the dispatch routine remembers the caller's map low using a stack data structure. When the function returns, it pulls the caller's map low off the stack and restores it so it can return control to the caller. The stack allows for the function being called to make its own dispatch calls. If the function being called tries to dispatch somewhere else, the callers pile up in the stack and they unpile as they return. I allocated 32 bytes for this stack so the mechanism supports 16 nested dispatch calls. Disabling Calypso code reuse. There's one more subtle thing we need to get this technique to work. On its strongest setting, Calypso's optimizer will attempt to share pockets of generated assembly code between functions. This is clever and useful, but we have to tell Calypso to not share code between two functions that live in different regions. Add these two arguments to the compiler, CC6502 command line, in your makefile. --no-cross-call and --no-interprocedural-cross-jump. I didn't know about this one at first and spent days trying to figure out why my program was crashing. I stepped through the generated assembly language, noticed the cross call, and thought this whole dispatch idea wasn't going to work. Then Kibo told me about these command line arguments and the day was saved. Thank you, Kibo. Limitations of the dispatch technique. Last month, I proposed that this region switching mechanism, the map low window, could accommodate keeping the kernel active in the 16-bit address space, and could still use the RAM underneath the kernel's addresses in bank 0 as a mappable region. I described a candidate memory map that did so, with regions all over bank 0 and 1 that avoid colliding with kernel and DOS variable space. There's no reason I couldn't allocate more regions in banks 4 and 5 if needed, I just wanted to see if Unix Rogue could fit entirely into banks 0 and 1. The most important thing to remember about this region switching technique is that the compiler will treat everything as if it is accessible at 16-bit addresses. At any given point in the code, the 16-bit address space must meet this expectation with whatever region is active. This works fine if the code in the active region only needs to access static memory, such as constants and local variables, within its own region, or on the heap, C-stack, or common areas, which are always visible. When code in the active region needs to access code in another region, it uses the dispatch macro to invoke the function. There is no equivalent mechanism to reach directly into another region's data space. One way around this is to provide accessor functions that could be called via dispatch. Arguments and return values are managed through the dispatch process via the C stack. Another way around this is to move shared data outside of the region space, such as into the common area. There's not a lot of room in there, but if having just a few shared variables untangles the program, it's worth doing. More care is needed when passing, storing, and dereferencing pointers. Whatever the pointer points to must be visible when the pointer is dereferenced. The pointer itself can pass through functions in other regions, but the thing that acts on the pointer has to be able to see that data. This can be counterintuitive when it comes to passing string literals as arguments. C makes it look like the string literal is a value that is being passed to the function like any other. What actually happens is the string literal is generated into the current RO data section, and a pointer to that value is passed to the function. If the string literal is an argument to a dispatched function, the literal will not be visible after the map has changed. One solution for string literals is to tell Calypso to place all RO data into the common area. In my case, I don't have nearly enough room. Rogue is very string heavy and makes extensive use of passing string literals as function arguments. Instead, I just barely manage to reorganize functions that take strings into the common area, so calls to those functions don't need the dispatch and the string literals stay visible in the region window. I eventually decided to implement another dispatch mechanism for functions with a single string argument, which happens frequently in Rogue for printing messages. This new mechanism copies the string argument to a buffer in the common area, then calls the function with a pointer to the buffer substituted for the string argument. The dispatch call looks like any other, with a special way to provide the string literal to the macro. I originally put the default code, C data, and switch sections in region 0. Calypso also uses these sections to place the C standard library functions that get pulled in when I use them. I was able to get away with dispatching to standard library functions for a while, but in the end I moved these sections into a common area so I wouldn't have to worry about it. I also narrowed my dependency on the standard library to just a few features. I didn't want to make any assumptions about whether the standard library was implemented in a way that was compatible with the dispatch mechanism. While functional, use of this dispatch mechanism is error-prone and difficult to debug. If I use the wrong region ID for either the caller or the destination, the program compiles, but crashes. If I forget to use dispatch when it is needed, the program compiles, but crashes. Debugger breakpoints are fraught because they're associated with the program counter and not the 28-bit address of the instruction, so a breakpoint intended for code in one region might trip at the same address in another region. You might ask, with all of these limitations, is this dispatch technique even a good idea? I have two answers. For one, mostly yes. Most of these issues come from the fact that my project is a port of existing code that was written for the Unix process memory model. If I were writing a program from scratch for the Mega 65, I'd design the program to the constraints of the memory map. And second, you don't really have much of a choice. If you have more than 32 kilobytes of code, you have to do something about it, eventually needing a mechanism to bring code from upper memory into the 16-bit address space. A dirty, dirty port. It sure would be nice to end this article series with a complete port of Unix Rogue for the Mega 65 that you could just download and play, even if you're not interested in the techniques. Unfortunately, I don't have that for you just yet. Just to be clear, my goal was to port the actual original Unix source code to the Mega 65, not just come up with an arbitrary roguelike game that vaguely resembles the original. This is a challenging goal. Rogue relies heavily on the Unix process model to simplify its code base. Any function can call any other function, and any function can access any global data with all of the overhead of calling functions and accessing data handled by the C compiler. Moreover, a local variable might have a pointer to it, and that pointer gets passed around, and who knows how anything gets accessed, and there's all the string literals and all the other stuff that we discussed here. The easiest way to write a game for the Unix process model, the simplified memory model of a C abstract machine, is to put all of the game state into a single public memory blob, and not think too hard about organizing functions into modules. The developers of Unix Rogue didn't have to think about 24 kilobyte memory banks or cross-region visibility. I wanted to get something working as quickly as possible, so I started making some rash decisions. I tried revising my memory map so that the 23,674 bytes of global data were always visible at 16-bit addresses. To do this, I deleted all the disk-based features, disabled interrupts, ejected the kernel, and replaced region 1 with global memory. This was not a complete solution to memory visibility, because many functions still used local variables and passed the addresses of these local variables to functions in other regions. I plowed through the code, juggled modules between regions, added dispatch calls, and fixed memory visibility bugs as I went. Dispatch calls generate much more machine code than regular function calls, and simply adding dispatch calls caused modules to overflow their regions, requiring more revision. I wrote Python scripts to help manage this process. I originally tried to use the call graph to help optimize code into regions, thinking that adjacent code would benefit from being in the same region and limit the number of dispatch calls. I didn't get very far with this technique. It was much more important to pack regions tightly. This is a classic partitioning problem, with simple approximate solutions. Longest processing time first scheduling is the algorithm I understand, so I wrote a simple Python script that analyzed module sizes and proposed region placements. The compiler makes LST files for each C module that summarizes the section contributions in bytes at the end. The linker's own LST file provides a complete summary of where it puts things and how the sections are filling up, invaluable if I were building up from scratch. In this case, until the regions were packed properly, the linker wouldn't even finish, printing the relevant information in a giant report of error data. Because the original code wasn't written to accommodate regions, I ended up with a grotesque amount of dispatch calls. Nearly every cross-module call became a cross-region call. I allowed this just to get to a point where I could see something running, promising myself I'd clean it up later. I got far enough to prove the point. The game starts, and you can walk around one floor of the dungeon and pick up objects. I'm confident that the rest of the work is just more of the same, cleaning up memory and code visibility bugs. It successfully runs a 90 kilobyte program spread across two banks of Mega 65 memory, all from compiled C code. All of this manual effort of placing code into regions and tracking visibility resembles tasks that you would normally delegate to the compiler. If the compiler were aware of the region-based memory map, it could place fragments into regions automatically, optimize their placement to minimize dispatch calls, and generate the dispatch code itself as part of function calls. This could provide a C abstract machine similar to the Unix linear memory space, such that I wouldn't need to do any of this by hand. And yes, I tried using GenAI coding tools to do this optimization, I won't go into detail about what I tried and didn't try, but suffice it to say that inexpensive context windows can't hold enough information for an LLM to act as a metacompiler on its own. For my goals of understanding the original Unix Rogue code base and developing the region dispatch system, I didn't want GenAI to completely rewrite the program, so I didn't make a deeper investment in token costs or GenAI workflow. A better approach would be to use GenAI to actually build the metacompiler, but I'm not inclined to outsource the fun part of my own hobby. In the end, I've decided not to finish the dirty port strategy. I have a way to write large programs in C, and I have bigger roguelike fish I want to fry. What I'm doing instead. I don't like promising future results for hobby projects. It takes the fun out of it, so don't take this as a pledge. But I have made some exciting progress on a new path. Taking what I learned from this dispatch technique, I started a fresh project with a new goal, to implement the maximal memory management strategy. I now have a new C-based game shell with these features. The potential to use almost all of 384 kilobytes of Mega-65 fast memory for C code, data, CPU stack, and compiler-owned variable heap and stack memory. Full control over hardware interrupts. Handlers are C routines and can power animations, sound, and music. Switchable major modes. Each major mode has its own memory map, and mode transitions load new code and data regions from disk. Each mode can use all 384 kilobytes of memory, such as a title mode with full-screen murals and menus, and a game mode that repurposes that memory for monsters, potions, treasures, and logic. A switchable kernel active mode specifically for disk access. Kernel memory is stashed in attic RAM when the kernel is not active, so game modes can use all available space. Game state memory that can be saved to and restored from disk. Raster rewrite buffer character graphics baked in, and unused ROM space in banks 2 and 3 are repurposed for graphics data. This shell could be used for all kinds of games and applications, and really it's the right way to do a port of Unix Rogue in the first place. Start with a shell like this, then gradually populate regions with Rogue functionality, one piece at a time. I'm not ready to support this shell as a product, but it's working, and if I make a full game out of it, I'll share source code. It's been a super busy August, with a combination of retro computer work and family vacation. September will be no different. I have stuff planned for VCF Midwest and not nearly enough time to prepare. I have a more laid-back digest planned for the end of next month, so hopefully that'll be a nice change of pace. Your support for the digest is more important than ever these days. Thanks as always for the feedback, encouragement, and contributions. If you'd like to support the Digest, please visit ko-fi.com/DDDAAANNN. Keep circulating the tapes! For more, visit my website, dansanderson.com/mega65.